Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Hello, Jim Jervis here, along with my co-host Han Tran. Han, how are you this evening?
I am swell, Jim. Very swell. Thank you for asking.
Excellent.
Yourself.
Excellent. Well, Welcome. I'm doing well. We had a little rainstorm, but thankfully the rain went by, so that's good. We won't hear the noise over the microphone. Tonight's episode, Straight Talk, number 41, questions directly from our listeners. This is going to be a unique topic, different from what we've done before. These are topics that you threw at us. Our listeners have given us a bunch of questions through different medias, and we've pulled them together. So hopefully we'll be able to get through as many as possible in the next 60 minutes or so. So it's, it's our delight, of course, to answer any specific question. If you have one and would like to give us a call, you can do that on our call-in number of 657-383-1442, or send us an email, carrier pigeon, doesn't matter how you get it to us, we'll do our best to answer it. We've had 40 episodes of numerous kind of topics. So actually, Han and I are really excited about this one because we're going to hopefully cram a bunch of stuff into 60 minutes here. Aren't we, Han?
Yeah, I think it's a nice breakaway from, the dedicated topic. So it cover, various questions and various topics and things like that. So I think it'll be fun. Yeah, we always have fun anyway.
There we go. That's true. That's because we love doing this stuff. We're kind of crazy. Well, I'll let you have the first question. What was your first question that you had on your list, Han?
Jim, I didn't pull that up yet.
Okay. So, well, then while you do that, okay. I'll pull up my first question. I've got a question from Dr. Sarah in Alabama, and she's asked, with construction costs soaring and contractor availability becoming more and more scarce, how do I get my new project done, or is it better to wait? Well, Doc, that's an excellent question, and it is common all over the country. Every contractor, every construction entity, every person we speak with in this field is saying that construction costs are obviously high. And the reason why they're high is because availability of both materials and laborers is scarce. The economy is doing very well. Everybody is busy. The good folks are very, very busy, and the moderate to mediocre folks are busy, and the entities that were lower down on the totem pole, to use that vernacular, they don't exist anymore because they went out of business, couldn't get through the hard economic times, and they're doing something else. So it's going to take two, 3 years before we get back to the point, and this is what I'm hearing from my construction friends, that when we get back to the point where you get those guys and girls that are working out of their pickup trucks with their vans that says, Joe's drywall or Susie's painting and that kind of stuff, to be able to, have enough laborers out there to train and, get them out of the system and then get them out and getting to working. But to answer Dr. Sarah's question specifically, how does she get her project done? Well, the first thing you need to do is, of course, if you've got any contacts in the construction world, and if you don't talk with people like ourselves, and we'll see what we can do about connecting with groups. We have associations with folks all over the country, and we'll try to find a entity or entities that would be able to possibly take on your project and fit it into their system or their schedule. Now, obviously, it may take a little bit of time to for them to be able to get to it. So you got to kind of be flexible with that regard. Do not think that you're going to start your design project today, go through that design process, and turn around and at the end of that have, you know, four or five construction entities ready, lined up, and willing and able to start the next day. That's not going to happen. Your best bet is to, like we always advocate, team up with a construction manager or someone in that realm that would be able to help from day one and give them time to be able to line up the necessary people to get the project done. I would specifically not wait because, like I said, what we're hearing out there, that this is a couple, 2 or 3 years away before, I mean, we've got contractors that literally are booking 2 years from today to do work. So waiting another 2 years just means there's 2 years worth of people, projects that are in front of you. So effectively, you're even that further behind. So if you're contemplating and thinking about, do it and do it now. And the other great thing about it, which wasn't in the question, but it is a very important part, is financing is inexpensive. It's at an all-time low. Just speaking with a financial institution the other day, and I think we're in the high threes, around 3.6, 3.8. And so that's not bad at all to have a rate at that rate right now. And I don't know, we're not a financial institution, are we, Han? But I don't see it going anywhere but up.
Yeah, there's a couple of things to take into consideration about managing or controlling costs too, Jim. Besides labor, this is life. It's not fair or unfair. When you have a finite pool of labor, they typically, and this is not just construction, this is engineering and design as well, is that the big client is the one that sucked up the talent pool first. So if you, for instance, we work with an engineering outfit out of Orlando. And when you think of going to Orlando, what do you think of? You think of Disney, okay? And Disney just happened to be one of their clients. Good outfit, you know, good engineering firm. But a dentist's office, which could range between, you know, 2,500 square feet to 5,000 square feet, somewhere in there. That is nothing compared to a facility with hundreds of thousands or millions square feet of facility that have constantly a need of services and innovative, design and ideas to stay, in the game and ahead of their competitors. So when a big client like Disney call, everything else takes second or third or fourth in line. So the talent pool that you have in good time may be limited to you, the dentist who is trying to do a new office. Okay, so that talent pool is hard to get on board with you when you really need them. Secondly, is that as things get busy, the other aspect that could affect your cost is materials. So if you can't get material, you can't build. There is instance where they actually ration concrete. Okay, if you're renovating or getting into an existing building and just build out, that may not affect you. But if you do a brand new building, that will. Okay, so waiting, you know, waiting until things settle down may not be the right thing to do or the smartest economic decision. You know, get your, you know, get the process going and be proactive and let your team help you to line up the talent that you need to build it. And they can, you know, start to hunt for material and things like that and get everything in line before, you know, before they actually, you know, get, so they get ready to start on the project. Jim?
Yeah, exactly. And what we found is a lot of times the construction manager will end up looking outside of the region to bring in the necessary potential laborers to be able to do, you know, things like drywall or whatever, if it's all possible, and make it work that way. I mean, we just had here in our neck of the woods the announcement, and they just started the construction on one of Amazon's new fulfillment center. That building is 2.5 million square feet of construction, and it's going to be done in basically 1 year period. So if you quickly do the math and you do the numbers, at 2.5 million square feet, that equates to about 140,000 cubic yards of concrete. So, Han, you were talking about concrete rationing?
Yep.
They're going to have their own batch plant at that project. So materials are going to be something that, you know, there'll be a concern. So
you get in. Yeah, you get in line.
Yeah, you're going to get in line because there's, you know, that's just ungodly large amounts of materials. I mean, we're talking about everything from regular, you know, drywall laborers, electricians, plumbers, you name it. They're all going to get sucked up by this particular project over, you know, a portion of the next year period. So be forewarned, if you have those kind of projects scheduled in your region, you have to find somebody who can think outside the box and figure out how to get this accomplished without that being a detriment.
Yeah, in term of labor force, the, you know, the people that build walls for, you know, in your office, they can build walls for anyone. The people that lay down plumbing and electrical for your office, they can do for anyone. The only area that are really make it unique is your med gas. So that talent pool could suck up by a by an operation like what Jim's describing. Really, really easy. A lot of time, you know, school projects and stuff like that, your local school suck up a lot of the talent pool because they have a very stringent, you know, schedule to meet. So whatever you do, just kind of put the ears to the ground, hear what's happening, so that way you can plan accordingly. Now, Jim, just down about 45 minutes south of me, in Ruskin, Florida, they built, a fulfillment center, Amazon fulfillment center. They're huge. They are absolutely huge. Okay. When I think, when you say, 1.5 million square feet under roof, a dentist's office in floor area doesn't equate to probably a fourth of their toilet facilities.
Exactly.
Okay.
And this one's 2.5. Yeah, this one's 2.5. I mean, it's going to generate an unbelievable amount for this this region. I think they're talking about 1,200 employees, and you know that's massive for the economy. But you're right, it does have an impact. So you know, be careful. Hopefully, that answers your question, Dr. Sarah. And you know, we're looking to obviously, if it doesn't, get back in touch with us. And we'll see what we can do to help you out in your specific. All right, Han, let's move on to yours. Did you pull one up there?
All right. I have a question from a Dr. Perez out of Texas. I'm in the process of looking at two existing buildings for my new office. what advice can you offer as to which of the two buildings would likely be the better candidate for my office use? One, a converted residential structure for business occupancy. The other is a former restaurant. Okay. Would you like to take one, Jim?
Wow, that's like the exact opposites.
Yes.
Interesting that he has that two opportunities, but, you know, you never know. You really never know what's available out there. And from a generic standpoint, you know, Han and I can answer that question, not seeing specifically those two particular projects, but we know what we've run into before. Let's start with the first one, the converted residential structure for business occupancy. Well, if it's already been converted to a business occupancy, that's a step in the right direction. Now, if it's just a residential that you're going to try to convert into a business occupancy, that's a big problem because the two codes are totally different. So you have the potential of running into a lot of stumbling blocks, everything from accessibility to widths of entries to corridor widths, all those things that are totally different from a residential code than they are to a commercial code, and specifically to a dental office. So that could be a problematic issue. If it's on a crawl space or a basement, that makes it a little bit easier because then you can deal with the under slab / underground / utilities that you need to get to your chairs and to your equipment. If it's on a slab, that's a problem. Now, or at least more problematic. Obviously, it can be accomplished. We do it all the time. You just end up cutting up concrete and having to go get the stuff laid into the ground, and then you put your concrete back in place and you move forward. Then from a residential one, Han, what's our biggest problem in residential? Isn't it parking?
Yeah, it deal typically deal with site issues.
Yeah.
Okay. Of course, let's say because this is already a converted structure. Okay. Then so most of those stumbling blocks have been overcome. However, it depends on the occupancy that was what it was used for previously. They still need to be, you know, looked at, and because business occupancy have different, you know, different functions. So the big thing about site, if you're looking at a residential structure, it would be great if it was a structure used for perhaps a hair salon, a clothing boutique, an attorney's office, where the flow and parking demand is low, but for a dentist's office. You have to dot your I's, cross your T on the things that's really important. Parking is one of them. Okay, and you take a house. A house only need a couple parking spaces. So if you convert that for commercial use, for light parking, you may have 3 or 4 or 5. But a dentist's office, right off the bat, 5, 6, 7 operatory, you're looking to the 20s and 30 parking spaces. So you have to have the land to be able to do that. You have to have, it depends on what's allowed. If you're fortunate enough that that structure is in a historic district, then it adds another layer of difficulties and things like that. But parking is one big major issue when you deal with the residential structure.
Exactly. Now, when you talk about the restaurant, a former restaurant, you shouldn't have the issue with parking. I mean, restaurants have a much higher requirement for parking in any code, and so you should have more available parking. And typically, restaurants are designed with an open area, which is obviously where the patrons go, the seat. eating the dining area, and then you have a kitchen area in the back. Maybe it has a bar. We've not ever designed a bar into a dental office, have we, Han?
I am pretty
sure. At least not one for the public.
I'm pretty sure a few of our dentists would like to have, at least in their office.
Yeah, exactly.
In their private office.
But right. So, you know, then it's a matter of, okay, you know, are we going to have issues with your slab? Is it a slab on grade or if it's a crawl space? Odds are it's probably a slab on grade. And so you're going to have that concern to deal with. It's not insurmountable, but it can be, you know, it is something that has to be thought about. The kitchen itself is probably something that would, you know, need to be demoed out and then utilized, because there's really no need to reuse anything in the way of a kitchen. My gut tells me that that kind of stuff might end up being great opportunity for staff lounge, back stuff, that kind of things. And obviously, you're probably going to have a better restroom kind of arrangement, but typically restrooms in restaurants are always located in the back, which is in the wrong place a lot of times for what best works for patient flow. So there are a few problematic issues, but all in all, you might have a better possibility of doing the restaurant in converting that into a dental, in my mind, than you would a house. Houses, you have to be so, so careful. They become money pits overnight if you're not careful.
Yeah, the two structures are day and night in the type of construction. Okay.
Yeah. And the restaurant is designed under the commercial code. So it's not a residential code, it's a commercial code, so it's a lot closer to the business criteria that a dental office would fall under.
Yeah. Let me throw a few things, because this is an area that I had spent some of my life at. Okay. When you look at a restaurant, between the two, residential and or a former restaurant, I think the restaurant has a lot more pluses. You know, one is it's obvious. It's usually a lot more visible, easy to access. Typically, they're, you know, in the size of the building are typically within the range of the 2 to 3 to 5 thousand square feet that a typical established dentist would look for an office. You know, parking is never an issue. Access is pretty much easy, so it has a lot of pluses. But if you look at restaurant, existing or former restaurant, do have come with a few issues. Okay, one of them is Jim already mentioned. Yeah, typically the way it's designed is that you have they call it the front of the house. That's where the patrons sit and eat and all that stuff. Restaurant facilities are usually in the middle and clustered together, whether it's single holder or multiple user. But for a dentist's office, it's typically if you're really, really cheap and you don't mind the compromise in where it's located and stuff like that, you'll keep it. But we typically advise against that, because you want the layout of a office that would optimize how you use it, how you utilize it, and how efficient it is. And not how cheap, but efficiency is what you're going after. So naturally, the kitchen, you know, it's electrical service. You shouldn't have any problem of not having enough. Water service, that's a piece of cake. Sanitary service, everything. So all those things are in its proper place. You're going to have to gut the kitchen. You may have to do a thorough cleaning, clean out, you know, demo the existing materials and stuff like that within the kitchen, because grease had a tendency to soak into the wall. You know, the mechanical equipment probably more likely will need to be replaced, because it is, you know, it had sucked up a lot of your restaurant fume and oil and all that stuff. So it's within, you know, within your ductwork and all that. So that need to be looked at, and probably just simply cut it, and at the minimum, cut out all the distribution trunk for the heating and cooling. Another thing that you may need to look at when you look at a restaurant building is if it has a flat roof. It's very easy to see. The oil, the grease from the kitchen, if it gets dumped onto the roof for any reason, the particulates, it will eat up the roof material. So you may have to invest in replacing the roof. But overall, between the two, I go with a former restaurant any day. Okay,
yeah,
it's a no-brainer.
Well, it okay. tends, unless of course the restaurant is just a pit, it tends to make more sense because you're already in the same kind of construction class, and it just makes it a whole lot easier to easily convert. And that's really what we're talking about here. The crux of the question is converting. What's the easiest way to convert between the two? Okay. Next question. I got a Doc Eric from Colorado. This is a good one, Han. You're going to like it. I've seen on your website that you and your team can do work all over the country. Actually, it's all over the world. But how is that possible? Isn't it better if I have someone local to be hands-on? Well, oh my, we could go on forever on this one, but the answer to your question from my side of things is it's really very easy. Han's in Florida. I'm in northwestern Ohio. Our clients are all over the country. And, you know, nowadays, especially with the computers and the internet and the ability to do remote conferencing through the computer systems, we can literally be more efficient and quickly communicate with anyone around the country or around the world at a moment's notice as compared to someone who has to get in a car and drive to your particular location, wherever that might be, even if they are local. Well, if they're local and they're, unless they're right around the corner, they're still going to take some time to get between point A and point B. If it's in a metropolitan area, it may take them an hour or it may take them 2 hours, depending on what traffic's like. Well, in that hour's time, Han and I have already had our conference with you at your leisure, wherever you're at, and had that discussion. You've already looked on our monitor, our screen, because we can share our screens with each other, and you're hearing our voice, specifically the areas and the intimate discussion of the complete design as we go through the process. It really can't be any faster. It really can't. The days of us having to go physically sit in front of you and look at you eye to eye are gone. We don't need it. We'll see each other through the camera on your monitor, so we get to see each other's face occasionally. It's always nice to interact that way. But, you know, we don't need to physically shake your hand to effectively do our job. And all that equates to is we're saving you money, because all that travel time, even if it is just across town, costs you time, which means it costs you money that your architect or designer has to charge you for. Ours is a 30-second phone call, and it is that easy to accomplish. I mean, You'll look at our design work, and we'll get into our software and our SketchUp software, and we're spinning around in the model. If you didn't know any better, if you had your virtual reality glasses, goggles on, you thought you were actually in the space. It's actually so much better. I mean, unless we were to take all our equipment and take it to your office and sit down in front of you and set it all up, you would not get that kind of design input any other way. So, Han, I'm sure you got a lot to talk about in this one.
I do. I think a lot of time when I hear that question is that, let me ask the question back, okay? What is it that you expect from your architect? And often the discussions is always, I want local and I want to be on the job every day. That is really, really unrealistic. It's almost like somebody say, I got a toothache and I want to see my, I want to have my dentist next to my, you know, next to my bed or next to my chair, you know, until the moment I need to have it extracted. They can't afford to have the dentist sitting there waiting. Most dentists, the project doesn't require, nor can a dentist afford to pay the architects on an hourly basis to be on the job site every day. Okay, it's unrealistic. To answer the question is that how are we able to do to service our client if we are across the country? 20 years ago, I worked on a project, a headquarter for a German company. And back then, the telecommuting or teleconferencing was in its infancy. I built a model, stick a camera in there, have a teleconference with the you know, with the German client in Germany, and so they can take a actual, not virtual, it's a camera tour of inside the building 20 years ago, okay, and they were able to make decisions and all that stuff on the fly. So with the technologies that we have available today, those things you can have. Drawings, you can have, you know, snapshots of 3D, or you can actually sit in front of your, you know, in front of your computer monitor, and we can communicate about ideas and options and things like that. And like Jim said, it saves you money. Time is money. For us to fly to your office or drive to your office, you pay for that hour, that travel time, and we're just basically driving or flying. Okay, or we can have a teleconference and or video conference, and you get to see the same thing faster, more effectively, because it's all about efficiency. Okay, that's today's modern way of doing things. A project could be in China, Australia. And we will handle it the same, okay? We have. So to have the necessity to have your architect to be next door, it's nice to have next door, but it's not necessary. Now, what about the local guys? Yeah, the local guys, if it's needed, and they have the skill set that you're looking for, then the local guy perhaps would be the one to go with. But typically, if you're looking for highly skilled, talented, designers and architects, and your local guys just don't have it in them to provide what you need, technology will fill that will bridge that gap really, really quickly. Okay, so we do projects all over the United States and a few abroad. Technology allow us to do that. Okay, so
and that's during the design side. When you talk about the actual construction side, well, we're not advocating that you don't have local representation construction-wise. Yeah, you need to have someone, a superintendent who's on the job, but they're an entity that works for the contractor. They're not your designer. Okay. Your design ideas, all your design stuff is done. The construction, that's done by somebody local. They may hire local subcontractors to do the work. And yes, we integrate with them in what's called the construction administration phase, where we do periodic observations. And even that can be done via electronic. Sometimes it's not, and then it's done by one of our representatives, and we go out and go through the project. But again, it's all designed in such a way that we can minimize the impact of the hours necessary to get the work done, because that helps us give it to you at a better price. Nothing worse than wasting your money. We don't want to do that. That's not what we're here about. We're here to give you a better design solution and get you moving forward faster and quicker so that we can move on and go help another group of people. And I hope that answers the question. Han, you're next. What do you got on your list?
I have a Dr. Vivian out of Tennessee. I'm having my new office design. What are some of the things that I can do to isolate noise or conversation between spaces?
Ooh, that's a good
one. That's always, yes, that is. That's always a good one, okay? Let me go at it. I think it all depends on what your objective is. You know, if you have an open space office, noise is one of those things that's really difficult to truly isolate in a dentist's office. The modern dental office usually have open treatment room, you know, or treatment room with open doors, or open door with door opening rather than with doors that you can close. So noise can, you know, can spill out from the treatment room into the hallway and so on. So noise is a little hard to isolate, but it can be done, okay? And usually it doesn't take a lot of money, but it takes money. For instance, here's an example. If you go in and you say, I want to do things cheap, I want my office, you know, I want so many, so many treatment rooms, and the contractors say, I can save you money. All we have to do is take the wall up to the ceiling, attach it to the existing ceiling grid, and off you go. We move the light, we move the ductwork, you know, we make the, you know, some adjustment, and there we are. And you say, that's great. I saved myself, you know, $5,000-$10,000 by doing that. The problem is, noise doesn't cost. Isolating noise will. If you have an open space above your ceiling where conversation within each treatment room can escape up into the ceiling and then transfer it into the adjacent space, the reason why is because your wall only abuts the bottom of the ceiling. It didn't go up all the way to the deck and insulate with sound insulation. So dividing the treatment room, to the roof deck, have drip wall on both sides, insulation within the wall cavity, that would be the correct way of doing it, okay, if you want to isolate noise. Sometimes you can even put, about 2 feet of bad insulation on each side of the wall, on up above the ceiling, that would also help to absorb some of the sound. Material in the office is important. The choice is the material. The artwork, things that would absorb sound. If hard surface naturally going to ricochet the sound all over the place. So, carpet is one of those material that would help to absorb the sound. There are specialty products, naturally, that are designed to further enhance that objective or to achieve that objective. So if you have a project that you have where you have noise issue, find an architect or a sound engineer, acoustician, that would look at your facility and make recommendations to do that. But as you build and have a design, make sure that your walls, wherever conversations are sensitive, wherever you have a lot of conversation. For instance, this is the general practice for us, is that your private office is always go to the deck. You know, take it from floor to the roof deck and board on both sides and sound insulation within the cavities. because you as the business owner do not want to have a conversation that everyone around you in the adjacent room can hear. Okay, that's just not a good thing. Bathroom facility, we do the same. So wherever your bathroom is, the wall goes to the deck and sound insulated. Rooms between rooms that are adjacent or the wall of the break room, we do the same. The wall of the sterilization and lab, that get the same treatment. The wall for your dental equipment, get the same treatment plus, because the noise in there is greater than what you typically hear in the in conversation. So noise isolation, usually for the walls itself, about 80% of the walls in your office will get that treatment. It costs a little bit more, but ideally that's how you can manage noise from transferring from one space to the next. Carpet, where it needs to be, and then sound absorbing material, including artwork and stuff like that, is where, it's some of the strategies that we use to isolate noise in conversation. Jim, is there anything that you want to add?
There probably is. Well, we've got several layers of noise. You can isolate noise, but we got to look at what the noises are first. Let's start off with, okay, you've got noise that you don't want to get to the lobby. Okay, so you want to locate the noisy rooms as far away as possible from the lobby itself. So the first impression, go back to our podcast about first impressions and that kind of good stuff. You don't want somebody walking into a place the very first time and they hear a whole bunch of sounds coming from an operatory that aren't that pleasant. So again, locate that noise as far away from as possible from that. Now, you've got design ideas that you can also help to mitigate the possibility of that noise getting to the lobby or to other locations. If you design in angles or corners in such a way that the sound, when sound bounces off a wall, think of it like playing pool. When you hit the ball and it bounces off a bumper, it will ricochet off at a certain angle and then go to the next bumper and go to the next bumper and go to the next bumper. Well, that's the kind of thing you want the sound waves to do. You want them to bounce off a wall, go to another wall, go to another wall. Each time it does that, it slows down, just like when you whack a ball in the pool table. It slows down every time it hits a bumper. Well, that's the same thing you want to do with the noise. When you design the layout, you want to be able to effectively get that sound to be reduced so much that by the time it gets to where you want it not to be heard, you don't hear it. And as Han was saying, from an acoustical standpoint, acoustical ceiling tile is much better than a single sheet of drywall. If you're going to go with hard surface drywall ceilings, then obviously you've got to do some special mitigation, acoustical batting, drywall, double and triple layers of drywall. Mass is another way to stop sound. Effectively, you've probably been in the situation where you were separated by a concrete wall. If you're in a concrete block room and making a sound, and on the other side, it's a lot quieter than if you had a steel stud with a layer of drywall as the wall. That concrete is heavier, its mass. And I'm not saying we use concrete, but if you were to put two or three layers of gypsum board drywall with resilient clips, you effectively can get the same kind of sound, not absorption, but basically it's deters the sound isolation between the two rooms. So you could do that with mass, meaning thicker, more material. And then obviously one of the big things is that whole discussion about separate your check-in from your check-out. You want to at least look at and think about how the best way to design their placement so that everybody that's checking out isn't heard by everybody that just checked in. So, I mean, hopefully that's answers the question in a more general sense, and obviously holler at us if we didn't get your specifics.
Last okay. point, Jim. Very, yeah, Jim, very, very, very good point. Is that in part of the strategy to isolate noise is separation of your zone within your building. In other words, you got your public space, you got your clinical space, and you have your staff space. So when whatever equipment and or source of noise, separated from the air, keep it as far away from the area that you want it to be, more quieter, more relaxing. Okay, so that's
I mean, we've even
point.
Had, yeah, we've even had a situation where we've put in two or three quiet rooms, which weren't open bay, weren't just open archways into the operatory. They actually had doors, either sliding doors or swinging doors, for those specific patient types, children, people that effectively, have issues or deal with pain or whatever, you can do that. You can say, okay, I have some quiet rooms and I have some normal rooms, and then, pigeonhole the necessary client into that particular area. So, okay, we've got a question from Dr. Tom in South Carolina. With several groups who design dental office spaces, how do I choose who's the best for my needs? Well, that's a topic in its whole self, and we don't have time to be able to go through every nuance in that, but I want to hit the highlights. Obviously, go back through and listen to all of our podcasts that have to do with the design process and the design team. But I would recommend that you need to pick a design entity, meaning an architect, who specializes and understands your unique needs as a dentist and a dental facility. So what that means is that someone who has the experience in doing things, someone who helps and communicates properly and communicates ideas so that you understand them, and that, like us, we have a system, a process, and our system and process is totally different than anybody else out there. Sure, there are a few similarities, but a majority of it is unique in itself. Our team is unique. We combine the expertises of both the practicing dentist of 35 plus years and Dr. Bill. Han, as our senior design, dental design entity, who's been doing this for 30 plus years. Myself as the registered architect, who's been doing this for 30 plus years. So in totality, we have almost 30, 60, 90, almost 100 years of experience combined in doing the work that we do. We've worked on hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dental offices around the country and some around the world. And so we understand the nuances of working on dental facilities as compared to, say, a local architect who's maybe done one or two, or a design build company that said they've done 100, but they are all in a retail shopping center complex and not done a freestanding unit, and your project happens to be freestanding. And that's the next point, too, is you want to pick a design team, an architect, who is familiar with your type of project. So if you're doing a freestanding building, brand new from ground up, that's a totally different project than somebody who's going in and doing a build-out on a retail center. Isn't it, Han?
Oh, yes. Totally different. Okay.
Totally different.
And I think let me just add a few points on Jim's. It's if you approach a project from a cost standpoint, I encourage you to at least research and perhaps broaden that perspective a little bit more. You're looking for a team that bring not just skill, not just talent, but bring you values? Do they know their stuff? Are they easy to communicate with? Are they open to ideas, or are they so fixed on their greatest idea and try to force it down your throat? You're looking for a team that can glean your thoughts, your objective, and make it better. Or at least present other options so that you can review and digest. Because it's if they are talented but they can't communicate or not open to hearing what you have to share or your desires and wishes and wants and stuff like that, it's a bad mix. Jim?
Yeah, and in the sense of our organization, HJT, we don't have a preferred system of equipment. We don't have a preferred supplier of equipment. We don't have a preferred anybody. Now, we have some folks that we associate with and we refer to, but we don't mandate that you have to use this particular whatever. Okay. We will work around what your specific wants and needs are. So if you want to have a chair designed by whomever, then that's who we'll integrate and work with. And if you want to have this kind of material, then that's what we'll work through. And if you want to have this kind of lending institution, then that's who we work with. Now, we'll help you find some of those people if you don't have anybody. But at the same time, we don't mandate that you have to use this, and or we don't mandate what your design has to be. So if you want an operatory that's 8'4.5" by 13'6", then that's what you're going to get. We're not going to say, no, it has to be 10x12 or it has to be 8x7 or whatever. We don't set those kind of parameters and say, well, because of whatever reason, that's the best thing for you. No, what's best for you is what you're the most comfortable in. I mean, we hear it all, hon. We hear it everything from, itty-bitty little spaces are more efficient to build that operatory as big as you can because you're going to use it one day. And we've heard from everything, well, you only need to have, minimal amount of operatories because you can only use so many at one time to build every operatory you can because that's where you make your money. Well, that's true.
Well, I think, Jim, I think the thing is, are you production oriented or are you more laid back and spend time with your patients and, just do it at a relaxed pace. You can take, for instance, there's a discussion right now that I'm looking at. It's got 1,000 square feet. I want to have 4 treatment rooms. Well, you can have 4 treatment rooms, but what else do you need? What else do you want? What can you sacrifice? So, you may say, hey, I am comfortable with a 8'4" by 13 feet wide treatment room. We may ask you why. What is the main reason to have that? Because we're in the design phase to understand your why. We can figure out the rest of the house. Okay. If you are accustomed to working that, but part of the problem is you can't fit everything in, or you have certain family that require or that demand that the parents is in the room. Well, you can't fit the people. You can't fit 2 or 3 more bodies into those type of treatment room that wide. So you may have 1 or 2 for treatment room. that are designed for that group of patients that have those needs. But like Jim says, that we're like Burger King, okay? Have it your way. You tell us what you need. We design it. Yeah, it's an old advertisement, but have it your way. You know, so you tell us what you need, and we make it work. If it makes sense to expand on that, to improve on that, at least we present it, and you say, hey, I like it my way. That's what you have. Okay, Jim?
Yeah, and don't get mad at us if we ask if you want pickles on that, if you didn't ask for it, because we'll
That's
ask
right.
those questions. We're very
right.
common. We'll ask those questions. Would you like this or would you like that? Because you may not have thought of that. Okay, Han, we have, I think, time for squeeze one more question in. What's your next question there?
This doctor's name is also Tom, and he's in New Hampshire. He'd say, can you share a few points on how to minimize construction costs for a renovation or build out? Excellent question.
Ooh, that is a good question.
Okay. Excellent question.
I would say the very first thing you'd want to do is you need to integrate, and this is the opportunity that you have the earliest to make the most impact on construction cost, is to integrate a construction person on your team the day you begin design work. I mean, that early. Use a construction manager, get them integrated into the design team come day one, because that's when you can really have the most opportunity to be able to affect positively costs in construction, when you're actually designing things. When you get all the way to the end and everything's all been designed and you fell in love with everything and all the materials and all the selections and all the other things, if you're then trying to say, hey, I need to look at cost savings, you have very little chance of getting much in the way of savings out of that. Because it is what it is. It's like, okay, you want this material? That's what it costs. Sure, you might be able to shop it around a little bit and find it for a few pennies here or there, but we're talking about pennies in the way of savings as opposed to dollars. You want to have the most impact on minimizing construction costs. Get that design person on the team come day one. Well, actually, day two. Hire us first, right, Han? Hire us first on day one, and then day two, hire the construction guy or girl, and they're part of the team. And then once we start doing all the design stuff, we integrate them with our electronic capabilities so that every design session they're part of, and they're saying, that's a good idea because that's good material cost savings, and nope, that's a bad idea because they just put in a giant Amazon fulfillment center here, and I can't get concrete. I won't be able to get concrete for another year. So, well, that's information you need to know, and the best person to have it is that construction entity, not your architect, not the financial guy, the construction guy or girl. On?
Yeah. Okay, so here's a few points, okay? And it has nothing to do with renovation or build-out. It has to do with decisions. Get your design done, make up your mind what you want to have, and stick with it. Because every time that you want to change, you will cause delay, you will cause what they call change orders, okay? Unless it's absolutely a must, stick with the gun. Stick with the program. There's a couple of considerations, too, when it comes to if you're renovating or build out a lease space, don't throw money into that place like it's your forever office. Select material that are within a range that you don't cry too much when you leave in 5 or 10 years. For instance, some of the floor material, for instance, it's not a big major cost, but it is to somewhat. If it costs you $20-$30 per square foot, and it has a life expectancy, you know, a service life of 30 or 40 years, your 10-year lease is up, and you decided, I hate the landlord, I got to get out, you know, you leave 20 or 30 years worth of money on the floor, okay? So look at the amount of, you know, the material choices according to whether you own the building or you lease the building. So that's how you save some of the costs. Make, you know what it is you want, have an idea what those costs are up front, so that way you have a good solid budget, and just don't let it be a decision made as you go, during the construction process, because you will find that our experience at Ben is that you get less quality for the same, if not more, in cost. So
yeah, that's an excellent point.
Excellent point,
Han. And the best person to give you that information come to during the design process, again, is that construction entity. It's a construction manager who will be able to tell you, well, we've got three materials here that could potentially be put on the floor. Material one costs $20 a square foot. Material two costs $5 a square foot. The material three costs $2 a square foot. All right. Well, what's the life expectancy of each? Well, you would hope that each had a commensurate life expectancy. And you would say, well, I only have a 5-year lease and maybe have another 5-year option. So that's 10 years. That will help you make that decision. Just like Han said, don't leave a bunch of high quality material on the floor or in the walls or on the ceiling or wherever that you're never going to be able to utilize again. That's money wasted.
Because the landlord would love you.
Oh yeah. The landlord loves it. Oh, they're happy with that.
Okay.
Because they can just turn around and swap it and sell it out to the next person and raise their rent.
That's right. Another dentist, okay? I do have one more of that, okay?
Your competition. Coming into town.
That's right. It depends on who you invite to the table to service you, okay? Here's a prime example. We have a client who hire a construction company to do the build out. So they did not competitively bid the project. Okay, the contractors say I will do it for X dollar. In this case, it was $152 per square foot, and that was basically from a floor plan only. Okay, looking at a layout of the space. But they never spelled out what they're going to do. Any material, none was discussed. The client say, well, that's the best people in town, and that's a reasonable amount. I get to see we were hired to do the conceptual design, so we didn't, we weren't on board with them to call out the rest of the stuff and control the materials and the detail of the facility. But looking at it is, they got a plain Jane for a high cost. Because at $152 per square foot, you should be able to have nice carpet, nice flooring material, more high-end, or should I say above average, vinyl composite tile, or for most of you, that it's the stuff that are 12 by 12 that you often see in old school buildings. They are bulletproof. They're great product, but they're probably one of the cheaper stuff that you can find. So if you want to really minimize the cost and control your budget, at least if you're going to go with the route of hiring a contractor to do the work without bidding it out and stuff like that, at least have them give you a list of things that they're going to use on your project so that you know whether, the level of quality that you're getting for your money and whether they're the right fit for you or not. I don't care whether they're best in town. if they're the best in town who like to cut a hole in the bottom of your pocket so the change fall out, they're not the right people for your team. That's just my input. Jim?
Cool. Well, hopefully that's been, we've gone a little over. Hopefully that's been informative. We got through a bunch of the questions. Keep sending them. We'll try to do another one of these sessions like this in the coming weeks. And again, hopefully it was informative that you take a little bit away from that. If at all, anytime you have a question, you can get a hold of Han or I. Send us an email, catch us on our 800 number, go to our website. It's, you know what it is. And, you know, we're just looking forward to talking to you again next week. And again, thank you for joining us. And Han, I'll give you the last words.
I love the Q&A session. This is fun. Appreciate you plugging in and spending the last hour with us. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.